See, the Lord Almighty will lop off the boughs with great power. The lofty trees will be felled, the tall ones will be brought low. He will cut down the forest thickets with an axe. Lebanon will fall before the Mighty One. A shoot will come up from the stem of Jesse, and from his roots a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of the knowledge and fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness he will judge the needy. With justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and with the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash round his waist. The wolf will lie with the lamb, the leopard will lie down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear, their young will lie down together, the lion will eat straw like an ox, the infant will play near the cobra's den, the young child will put his hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea.
When the time came for the purification rites required by the law of Moses, Joseph and Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves or two young pigeons. Now there was a man in Jerusalem called Simeon, who was righteous and devout. He was waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what the custom of the law required, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, "Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace, for my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles, and the glory of your people Israel." The child's father and mother marveled at what was said about him. Then Simeon blessed them and said to Mary, his mother, "This child is destined to cause the falling and rising of many in Israel, and to be a sign that will be spoken against, so that the thoughts of many hearts will be revealed, and a sword will pierce your own soul too." There was also a prophet Anna, the daughter of Penuel of the tribe of Asher. She was very old. She had lived with her husband 7 years after her marriage, and then was a widow until she was 84. She never left the temple, but worshipped night and day, fasting and praying. Coming up to them at that very moment, she gave thanks to God and spoke about the child to all who were looking forward to the redemption of Jerusalem. When Joseph and Mary had done everything required by the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee, to their own town of Nazareth, and the child grew and became strong. He was filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was on him.
Imagine this. Jesus, King, Messiah, Christ, born in the house of David, the root of Jesse, proclaimed by the prophets of old, waited for by everyone, and witnessed by those in tune with the Spirit of God. Presented in the temple, reminiscent of Samuel 1, 24 to 28. In a manner that keeps the law of purification, the Lion of Judah taking his throne, just like Lion King. I had to do that. It was in my head as soon as I read this passage. And by the way, if you don't know me, my name is Chris. I'm the curate here. I've been here since about June, and I am kind of training under Bridget to know what to do as a church leader. I'll get there at some point, I'm sure. It happens around third year, fourth year, something like that. Yeah. So we have this story which is talking about the reality of purpose and fulfillment and of what it means to wait on God. And it kind of feels, if you read the Isaiah passage, like the Disney thing, doesn't it? Like, da-da-da-da. Simba raised above the rock. But it's not like that. It isn't like that. In fact, it's really different. Purpose, promise, and fulfillment are hard fought. They're hard earned, and it hurts sometimes. Stomach churningly, it hurts sometimes. And this phrase kept coming back to me in this narrative of Jesus. Life happens between Christmas and Easter. Stuff happens between Christmas and Easter. So, I was going to, there's a whole other talk actually written here. It's 5 pages long because I've got it really big because of my eyesight. But as Bridget came in this morning, she gave me a letter. And I have to fight back tears for saying I don't even know why. But it was addressed to the Good Shepherd, no one's name on it. And in it was this letter with another one with my name on it. And in that was a message from a young person I worked with, I say worked with, I'll tell you the story properly, 13 years ago, wanting to get hold of me to say thank you. I'm going to move my stole because it's interfering with the mic. And I've got this, I know, David, there's a theological sermon here written. I will give it to you. It has lots of stuff about Old Testament prophecy. It has lots of stuff about, you know, the narrative of Jesus in there. All of you guys who really love that stuff, I will email this to you straight after, please. But I'm just going to share from the heart, actually, which is often where those who've known me most of my life know where it really happens. So 13 years ago, I'm coming off the train in Lewisham Station, and there is a young man, I think he's about 18, and his English is terrible. He's from Italy. He has hitchhiked from Juventus to Lewisham. How? I still don't know why. And he told me he ended up in Lewisham because I thought he said it sounded like a princess's name or a queen's name. His English was terrible, to be honest. But it wasn't. In this letter, he says it was because he really loved Lewis Hamilton. And Lewisham sounded like his name. And I cannot... So me and the other youth workers, just at this point in my life, I'm working with young people at risk of going to prison. I'm working on estates late at night. My life is at risk sometimes by doing my work. And I loved it. It was like the best thing of me. And this young person from Italy comes in who has hitchhiked, which obviously means he had some money. So he's not from a poor background. And he's made his way to Lewisham. And I'm thinking, you're going to be dead in the morning. So I sorted him out. I did what I generally don't like doing, which is going a little bit beyond my boundaries. I pushed into a place that, if you know my mum, she does very often, and there's a reason why I don't do it, because she's always giving everything. If she had sweets in her pocket and you wanted food and she was about to have a diabetic moment, she would give you the sweets. She's that sort of person. She's absolutely silly. So this boy, I thought, oh, you're going to be dead in the morning. He's sleeping rough in Lewisham, which is, he's 18, he's from Juventus, his English is poor. He's been there a little while. We've phoned the Italian embassy. He can't, the Italian embassy's like, well, phone your mum and dad, get them to pay for you to go home. Like, why? We're not dealing with you. So I've tried everything to do the normal routes of like sorting this person out. So then I said to him, just give me your dad's number and we'll phone him. So I phoned his dad, had a broken conversation between someone who speaks very little English and someone who speaks no Italian. But you know, I've been built for this. My grandparents don't speak any English and I speak no Creole. So I'm used to having conversations with people who you know, just don't understand me. And somehow, I get his dad to send some money. I buy him a ticket on the EasyJet flight back to Juventus the next day, or 2 days, or a day later. But he needs to sleep somewhere. And everything in me is like, he's not sleeping in my house. No way. But he's 30 and he needs a shower. So I phone Beth, my wife, who's just sitting there. And we've got a 2-year-old at the time. Yeah, Deborah, our 15-year-old, would have been about two. I said, look, I'm really sorry. This guy needs a shower. Hide all the valuables. You go in the living room with the baby, and I'll just make sure he has a shower, and then he can come out. And so we do this. He has a shower, then I take him back, and we sleep in my office, which is on Belmont Hill, just by the police station in Lewisham. If you know Lewisham well, you'll know where the police station is. Biggest police station in Europe. So he sleeps in one office and I sleep in the other. I say sleep, I did not sleep. And then my friend comes in the morning to pick him up so we can put him on the flight to Juventus. He goes back, I never hear from him again. I think his dad may have text messaged me or something to say thank you, he got home. That's it. So this morning, I'm in church preparing my sermon, just going over it. I'm dyslexic, so I don't like to read notes. I normally have memorized stuff or I have little bullet points which I go through. So I'm just sorting out that bit. I wrote my sermon in the week, people. This is not Chris didn't do his work. And Bridget comes in with this letter. And as I read it, there's nothing in it that poignant, to be honest. Just, I wanted to say thank you. And it's been 13 years. I've been thinking about you a lot. Nothing. My life has turned into amazing. I am now a racing driver or any of that. Just, I just wanted to say thank you. And I'm in tears. I'm thinking, what is going on? And I feel God say to me, here you go. So, my theological sermon, for those of you with that in need, is there. You can read it. I'll write a book one day, maybe, and you can read that as well. But from my heart, that bit of real life that happens, where you do not know what is going on, where things go wrong. Don't even know why I'm crying. Where it's hard, it's distressing. Anna, the prophetess in this passage, has lost her whole family. She waits and waits and waits in the temple, going to every service. Like, really? Would any of us want to do that? No. I'm employed to be here. I would come to church, honestly, please. But would you really, honestly, wait? Simeon is told, before you die, you will see this come to fruition. He sees a baby, maybe a 2-year-old. This is just before, possibly, when the wise men come to visit in that channel. But there's no, he doesn't see the stuff of what happens, does he? He just sees someone being brought to the temple and he goes, ah, God told me. That's it. I agree. I'm fruit. That's the fruit of my life. There, a child being brought to the temple. Really? Purpose, fulfillment, prophecy, all these things, these words we say, those things about our life that we think, what is the purpose of what I'm doing? Why am I here? Have I really done what I'm supposed to do? Those things are hard fought. They come from places of deep worry and regret, and sometimes of just not knowing what the next step is. I can't tell you that becoming a priest was an easy thing, that I just knew that it would happen. I didn't. I was going to be a doctor in psychology. I was going to work with young people who were unwell mentally and was going to help them traverse the system of the education and the NHS, which is really hard to do. I studied cognitive psychology at university because it was a worthy pursuit. I became a youth worker. I worked in mental health hospitals, all for to reach that purpose. And when I went to get my doctorate, I was turned down at every stage. No one could understand. Every person I came to and said, this is my form, does it sound right, this is my experience, they were like, you are perfect for this, Chris. Do it. Do it. And every door was slammed in my face. And I couldn't understand it. And I still think I would have been a doctor. And it would have meant something. It meant nothing. That's why I say, sometimes our purpose, the thing in our head, the vision we have, when we're not listening, or when we are, is different. My sermon this morning is completely off the cuff. With some bits prepared. I don't like doing that because you've spent time listening to me and that's important, so I should prepare and it should be good. But God spoke into this morning and said, not today, Chris. So I offer that to you. It's hard fought. It is stomach-churningly painful at times. It is the prayers of your grandmothers, your aunties, for years and years to see you come to your fruition. As a young person, some of you here, your parents are praying for you and you don't even know it. They're thinking, I don't know what they'll be, but I know God's got a purpose for them. I know some of you are grandparents and you bring your children, your grandchildren here. And I know you're praying for them and I know you're wish of the fulfillment of their promise is there. I know it yearns in your heart and you don't know what it will be, but it's strong in there. All those things are the hard-fought things of promise and purpose. And God is whispering to us constantly, saying, I am with you. Wait. You'll see the signs. And hopefully we get to catch them.